The signatories to the 2015 agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, have resumed negotiations in an effort to revive it. The number of daily COVID-19 cases and deaths is declining in Iran, with the country reporting its lowest fatalities in over 19 months. And Somalia's prime minister orders the country's security forces to take orders directly from him after he was suspended by President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. The signatories to the 2015 agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, have resumed negotiations in an effort to revive it. This is the eighth round of talks in Vienna between Iran and the P4+1 group of countries, namely Britain, France, Russia, and China, plus Germany, since April. The U.S., an initial party to the JCPOA, is not directly involved in the talks. Washington says that it wants to rejoin the agreement after unilaterally abandoning it in 2018. Iran, however, says that this is only possible if the U.S. verifiably removes all JCPOA-related sanctions imposed against it after the withdrawal. Tehran also wants assurances that the other side will not leave the agreement again. The Iranian foreign minister says the issues of guarantees and verification are the main points of the new discussions.
The most important issue for us is that through such terms and issues, we would reach a point where, first of all, Iran's oil is easily sold without any restrictions, and its revenue is credited to Iran's banking accounts in foreign currency, and we would enjoy all of the economic benefits foreseen in the JCPOA.
Amir Abdullahian noted that the talks will be based on a new, joint, and acceptable document that was agreed earlier this month. During the previous round, the new Iranian administration presented two separate proposals on the removal of U.S. sanctions and Iran's return to its nuclear commitments under the JCPOA. Iran says the Europeans agreed to incorporate the proposals in a draft text that will form the basis of the upcoming negotiations. Okay, so the breaking news is coming from Syria regarding the occupied Golan Heights. Syria is condemning Israel's decision to double the number of settlers in the Golan Heights. Now, state media making that statement, Syria condemning Israel's decision to double the number of settlers in the Golan Heights. So that is what Syria has said, condemnation coming from Syria, and of course additional pieces of this news as it trickles in, we will make sure to give to you. Earlier we were joined by Homolesky, a correspondent at the venue of the talks in Vienna. Now, she says China and other participants in the talks believe that the seventh round of negotiations was fruitful since both sides agreed on a comprehensive agenda for the continuation of the talks.
The joint commission session officially opened this eighth round, and both at the expert level and the level of political directors, these negotiations are going to continue. We're just ahead of this live, speaking with the Chinese ambassador to these negotiations. He was giving a little briefing about what's been going on today, just ahead of the Joint Commission session. He said that he believes, and all of the other sides believe, that the previous round was a fruitful round, was a productive round, because they came up with that joint document that we just talked about. He said that we came up with a common text on nuclear activities. There was also news from sources close to the Iranian team saying that progress has been made on the issue of nuclear activities or Iran's return to its nuclear commitments, and it has shown that Iran is serious in these talks and is willing to show flexibility. On the other hand, he said that the Chinese ambassador said, we have come up with a new understanding on how to deal with sanctions lifting as well, which in my view again refers to the joint text that the sides have agreed to base their discussions on. When we're speaking about this joint document, this in no way means, Kaveh, that there's an agreement on the issues that are included in that document. Indeed, in this round or the other round, if there will be any, all of the delegations may come up with new proposals, new ideas that they would want to incorporate into this. It's the way that these negotiations work. So the important achievement for the previous round was that they have agreed to work on this common text, and now it's time for them to go into the contents. So before this, it was all about agreeing on the agenda. And now it's about going into the content and discussing those tough differences, those tough decisions that need to be made and the differences that are still there.
Iran continues to witness a declining trend in fatalities from the coronavirus. The country reports 34 new deaths from the pandemic. It's the lowest daily tally in over 19 months. The health ministry says 20 out of 31 provinces have reported no fatalities in the past day. Iran's daily infections were also below 2,000 in the past 24 hours. That's also among the country's lowest daily caseloads reported in the past couple of weeks. The downward trend in Iran's COVID cases and deaths is largely attributed to the mass vaccination campaign. More than 117 million jabs have been administered nationwide so far. Nearly 51.5 million Iranians have received two doses of a COVID vaccine. That is almost 61% of the country's population. The Gaza Strip is bracing for the worst to come following the discovery of the first case of the Omicron coronavirus variant in the impoverished coastal sliver. The healthcare system in Gaza has been facing the COVID-19 pandemic with limited capabilities, with their health facilities suffering from shortages of medical supplies. Ashraf Shannon brings us more details in this report.
As the world marks International Day of Epidemic Preparedness, Gaza's health sector continues to suffer due to the hermetic Israeli blockade in place since 2007. On Sunday, the Ministry of Health in Gaza announced the discovery of the first case of Omicron COVID variant in the blockaded enclave. Around 1,700 Gazans have already died because of the coronavirus since last year. The Gaza Strip, which is one of the world's most densely populated areas, has recorded nearly 190,000 COVID-19 infections since May 2020.
We have discovered the first case of the Omicron variant in the Gaza Strip, and this indicates that this variant was now spreading among the population. The discovery poses a new challenge to the enclave's weak health system. Omicron is a fast-spreading variant and highly infectious and will be dominant among the coronavirus infections in the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli blockade and multiple wars have had a devastating impact on the well-being of people in the tiny coastal sliver. The Israeli regime also maintains tight restrictions on the entry of humanitarian supplies, including medicines and hospital equipment, to combat COVID-19 and its variants. People in Gaza are bracing themselves for the worst following the local discovery of the Omicron variant.
The Gaza Strip's health system is fragile because of the Israeli blockade. We are afraid of Omicron because we know that it is extremely lethal. Gaza is not prepared for Omicron, and we are praying for a miracle.
The Ministry of Health in Gaza needs all the support it can get in order to combat this deadly variant. We don't have enough hospital beds or medicines because of the Israeli blockade. We call on all international organizations to help us combat the coronavirus, especially the Omicron variant.
The Israeli regime has compounded the risk of coronavirus infection for over 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza, making it extremely difficult to combat the deadly pandemic.
Israeli inhumane practices have battered Gaza's health system. Experts say that the Omicron variant will only worsen the health situation in the blockaded enclave. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Christmas travel chaos continues as airlines around the world are canceling more flights amid concerns over the rise in the Omicron variant of COVID-19. U.S. airlines have canceled more than 2,000 flights on Monday, with 800 of them being domestic ones, forcing travelers to seek other forms of conveyance. These were on top of over 3,000 cancellations during the Christmas holiday weekend. About 8,000 flights have been scrapped globally over the past 3 days. That has caused further uncertainty for New Year holidaymakers. German Airlines says it has decided to cancel 10% of its winter flights. In Asia, Chinese airlines have experienced the most disruption since Christmas Eve. Airlines say that they have been forced to take the decision as a significant number of their workers are in quarantine after being exposed to the Omicron variant of COVID-19. The political rift in the conflict-ridden Somalia intensifies. The prime minister has now ordered the country's security forces to take command directly from him after being suspended by President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. Mohamed Hussein Roble has accused the president of trying to stage a coup against the government and the constitution. That after the presidential office announced a suspension of Roble's powers, citing corruption charges. The political feud between Mohamed and Roble has generated months of tensions in the African country. Both figures accuse each other of holding up parliamentary elections. The President Mohammed has also removed from office the commander of Marine Forces. In April, pro-government and opposition fighters opened fire on each other in Mogadishu after the president extended his term without holding fresh elections. On to Iraq. Iraq's Supreme Court ratifies the results of the October 10th parliamentary elections that were challenged by various political groups. In a statement, the court's media officer announces the approval of the vote outcome. That shortly after the apex court rejected an appeal filed by the popular mobilization units to annul the results. The ratification now clears the way for a new parliament to hold its inaugural session within 2 weeks under the law. The country has been locked into a political stalemate since the elections, in which a bloc led by Clerk Muqtada al-Sadr was declared as the biggest winner. The PMU and some other political groups, however, contested the outcome as fraudulent, citing irregularities. The Arab country witnessed widespread protests in the aftermath of the elections, with people demanding a recount or fresh voting. December 27 marks the anniversary of a U.S.-led attack in Afghanistan's northeastern Kunar province that led to the deaths of 10 civilians. An Afghan investigation found that American troops who were part of a covert operation program, along with CIA paramilitary officers, carried out the assault. They gathered the victims in one room and opened fire. Most of the victims were students and children, aged between 12 and 18. Some of them were handcuffed before being shot. Witnesses said they saw the students' school books covered in blood. NATO officials initially claimed that they had targeted Taliban members, but a 2015 investigation carried out by then-Afghan government asserted that they were all civilians. The United Nations expresses deep concern over escalating violence in Myanmar, urging a ceasefire between the military and the opponents in the Southeast Asian nation. In her first statement as UN Special Envoy for Myanmar, Nolien Hazer also calls for humanitarian assistance to all in need, including those forced to flee. She also referred to the escalation in Kaya State, where 35 civilians, including women and children, were killed 2 days ago. On Sunday, a UN official said that he was horrified by the killings and demanded the government launch a probe. Local media blamed the tragedy on the military that took power in a coup against the civilian government in February. About 1,300 anti-coup protesters have been killed and thousands arrested since then. Hundreds of people have also fled to neighboring Thailand amid the crackdown. Tensions, sanctions, and threats to take more actions were the main features of U.S. foreign policy in 2021. The incumbent President Joe Biden was expected to take a less tense approach towards world affairs than his predecessor Donald Trump. Disputes persisted and even intensified on multiple fronts.
Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
President Joe Biden, a Democrat, took over the White House from his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump, in January 2021. There were expectations that American foreign policy would see less tensions with allies and adversaries under Biden. But that didn't happen, and at times, tensions grew further, like those with China. In fact, the rivalry with China shaped a great portion of Biden's foreign policy as he sought to counter Beijing's growing influence in the world. As a result, disputes such as those on Taiwan, trade, and technology escalated. President Biden even angered his European allies when in September he announced an alliance with Britain and Australia meant to help Canberra build nuclear-powered submarines in the Pacific. The U.S. drew a Pacific ally closer to meet the China challenge, but at the cost of a 2016 deal being scrapped between France and Australia. Furious France called the deal a betrayal that had been secretly negotiated for months. The U.S. move further increased the push within the EU that the bloc needs its own independent military force, with member states aiming to agree on that in March 2022. To counter Beijing, Washington also put more focus on Africa, pledging to boost development in the continent where China already made investment and concluded trade agreements. The U.S. remained at odds with another power in the East, Russia. In addition to several rounds of sanctions over the alleged poisoning of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny, Washington sparred with Moscow over Ukraine too. It accused Moscow of preparing a war on its neighbor, ignoring repeated calls by Russia to stay away from near its borders. Cuba and Venezuela were targeted too. Sanctions against the two Latin American countries remained in place and even intensified over their internal policies. Iran, was not an exception either. While it was trying to resolve issues surrounding the U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 Iranian deal. But allies in West Asia had a different place in the U.S.'s foreign policy. Political and military support for Israel continued, despite the regime's atrocities against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. And American ties with Saudi Arabia were warm, despite Biden's election promise to punish the kingdom for the 2019 murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Biden had also pledged to help end the Saudi-led war on Yemen, but despite that, he continued to approve weapons sales to the Saudi government, making the conflict drag on and resulting in more atrocities and war crimes. On Syria, the U.S. pursued this policy, keeping forces there on what Washington called an advisory mission to support Kurdish fighters battling the Daesh terror group. However, the American forces and their military bases came under attack on various occasions. The attacks happened amid calls for the U.S. expulsion from Syria, mainly over civilian casualties caused by American operations. Similar calls also grew in neighboring Iraq, where the U.S. finally ended its combat mission and limited it to an advisory one. And in Afghanistan, the U.S. implemented President Biden's so-called policy of ending forever wars. America fully withdrew from Afghanistan in August, following a sweeping takeover by the Taliban, the same group Washington toppled when it invaded the country 20 years ago. Biden defended his decision to end the Afghan war as he faced widespread criticism at home and abroad over the pullout marked with chaos and deadly violence. He also remained adamant to unblock frozen assets for Afghanistan under its new rulers, leaving that country alone to deal with all the ruins left behind from the longest overseas war in U.S. history.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. And this is the sender's address. This is the receiver's address, who is my cousin's address. And this is the subject of the email. And now dinner's keep finished. Oh, well, we're living in the era of speed and technology, and in my idea, it's a really good era. Typing and sending this email just took 5 minutes, and my cousin, who lives in Germany, received my message in seconds. If it was 50 years ago, she must have waited for weeks to receive my message. Today, we are going to visit Tehran's Post and Communications Museum. Stay with me. Iranians of Achaemenid era, by establishing Chaparkhane, literally courier house, opened the first postal service in the world. Greek historian Herodotus writes about the postal system in Iran. There is nothing that travels faster and yet is mortal than these couriers. The Persians invented this system, which works as follows. It is said that there are as many horses and men posted at intervals as there are days required for the entire journey, so that one horse and one man are assigned to each day. And neither snow nor rain nor heat nor dark of night keeps them from completing their appointed course as swiftly as possible. Initially, Tehran's Post and Communications Museum was opened in 1932 as part of the Ministry of Post and Telegraph. This building, which was located at southern part of Imam Khomeini Square, was dismantled in 1970. The current building of the museum was constructed, inspired by the national architecture, and is one of the outstanding structures of the area of Tehran's National Garden. I am now standing beside the building of Tehran's Post and Communications Museum. This building once used to be called the post office. Several different materials have been used in this big, beautiful building. Stone, brick, and wood. It has also a gabled roof. Let's go inside to see what's going on there. Tehran's Post and Communications Museum is a two-story building along with a basement. There are 8 chambers in each floor which have been allocated for a certain subject. I am now on the first floor of the museum. This chamber is ceremonial and for the ministerial level. Photos of 72 ministers since past till now have been showcased in this chamber. And this chamber consists of postal staff. Different post boxes from Iran and other countries are here. It's very interesting. And here, there are the uniforms of postmen. And in this part of the chamber, you can see seals by which postage stamps were revoked. and I am now in the Chamber of Silk Road. Here, all the communications staff of the past time till today have been showcased. On my right, there is a chariot with a horse. And in this part of the chamber, there is a small vehicle with three wheels, which has this riding post. And on the other side, you can see a replica of an airplane. However, these days, drones are used for sending mails. I am now on the second floor. Here there is a big hall called the Hall of International Stamps. Here there are stamps from 130 countries. Oh, look at the showcases. Inside the showcases, you can see sealed envelopes, which have been donated to this museum by well-known or outstanding figures. Ah, good old days. My father gave me a stamp album when I was 8. I take a look at my grandma's basement this time. Maybe I can't find my album there. Perhaps my stamp album has become precious during these years, and I can donate it to the museum.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
We've been discussing the matter of the emotional connection with Fatima al-Zahra, salamullahi alayha, and the importance of it, what it is, and how to improve that, how to increase that relationship. If we don't understand that, the way we're going to be dealing with this relationship is going to be different compared to when we know what her relationship is, what her part is, what does she do, what type of involvement does she have. Looking at her as a person, she is more interested in us remembering her with Ali ibn Abi Talib, remembering her behind the door, remembering her in the street in Medina, beating our chests for her, asking her for assistance, speaking to her, telling her of our troubles, of our issues, and our need for assistance from her, in order for her to do her job, her responsibility to Allah, which is to get us closer to Him. She's more interested. She's more involved. Remember, we said on, I believe, the first night, when we get distracted, when we get lost in this material realm, if we had developed that relationship earlier, then she comes to us and brings our heart again, that reminder of Fatimatu Zahra. She's the one that does this. When we ask her for help, this is an important part to understand in this relationship. If we say she's the one that initiates, she's the one who is more interested, she's the one who cares more, then why is it that I ask her, and I ask her, and I ask her, but I don't see it, I don't get it. I thought if she was involved, I thought if she was more interested, I thought if she was the one who initiated, that I've come to her, she knows my issue, why am I not getting this? This is a general teaching that we have in regards to our du'as generally. Let's get this straight. She's a manifestation of divine mercy. She's going to present and give what Allah wants given, nothing other than that. How does Allah give? Did Allah Himself not say, Ud'uni astajib lakum, call on me, I will respond to you? Why is it when we call upon Him, and if Fatimatu Zahra is more interested, is because God made her such. And if she doesn't give us what we are asking for, then God doesn't want her to give us what we're asking for. Why does God not want us to have what we're asking for? I thought He said He's going to answer our call. Yes, He said He's going to answer our call. He didn't say, I'm going to give you everything that you asked for. That was never said. It's never, nowhere to be found. Astajib lakum. Ijaba is to answer the call. Does answering the call mean that you're going to get it right there and then? Whatever you're asking for, He's responding to your call. If you're asking for something that is bad for you, He's hearing your call, He's answering you, because what you're really wanting is something that's good for you, but you're misapplying it. You're asking for something that you think is good for you, where it's actually bad for you. He responds to you by giving you something that is better than what you imagine of that thing, which is actually not good for you. And this is what Fatimatu Zahra salamullahi alayha, as the one who God has put her in charge of this. When you ask Fatimatu Zahra for something and she doesn't give it there and then, don't conclude, I didn't deserve, that's why I didn't receive. Yes, conclude always, I don't deserve. When the first thing you say when we go to Fatimatu Zahra is, I don't deserve my words to be heard. Where are you and where am I? Who are you and who am I? Who the heck am I? And who are you? You're one of the muqarrabin of, in fact, the closest to Allah. And where am I even amongst all these billions, trillions of trillions of trillions of creations that God has? Where am I in this ocean of creation? You're closest to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I am nobody. I don't deserve to be heard. I don't deserve any of that. Always say that, remind ourselves. That's the reality of the matter. But when we see her not giving, then conclude, Ya Fatimatu Zahra, I know you heard me. And as long as I think this is good for me, based on what you have taught me, I will keep asking for it until I know otherwise. But I know if you don't give it to me, it's not because you look at me and say, oh, he's not worthy, because you're more generous than that. But it's because you look at me and say, my child, you're ignorant, you think this is good for you, I'm giving you something that's better for you, and you'll see. My child, this time is not good for that. Keep making dua. I'll give you more spiritual things. When the time comes, I'll give you what you're asking for as well. and many other things that we can't think of. This is the reality of the relationship, brothers and sisters. The manifestation of Wilayatullah. She's one of the Awliyaullah. And manifesting that aspect of wilayah that Allah has with us, she takes care of us. It's important in our relationship that we understand her part to be that. It's important in our relationship with the Ahlul Bayt in general, and with Fatimatu Zahra more specifically, for us to think of and understand the relationship as it is, and this is how it is. Otherwise, if we misunderstood that, again, the reality doesn't change based on our misunderstanding of it. Our perception of reality doesn't make reality what it is. Reality is what it is. Our perception, if wrong, hurts us. That's what it does. That's why we need to correct our understanding of this relationship. And then we'll start to see our hearts feel closer to the Ahlul Bayt. Our hearts feel closer to Fatimatu Zahra. Once we correct that understanding of the relationship, if I think I'm the one that's always begging, I'm the one who's always going, I'm the one who's proactive in this relationship, and I don't see her involvement, she doesn't come to me when... No. If that's our understanding, which is an incorrect understanding, then the way our heart is going to feel towards them is a certain way. It's not, you're not going to feel, you just can't feel too close to someone who you feel your relationship with them is such. Or you don't even realize what your relationship is. You're negligent. That means you're not really taking it seriously. That's what that means. If we're negligent, we're not even thinking, every now and then we just call on Fatimatu Zahra, we call on the Ahlul Bayt for help and support when we need, that means we don't even really think that they're there. We don't even think that there's a real person that we're speaking to. If we think that there's a real person we're speaking to, then these thoughts come. What is this relationship about? Why isn't it I don't see this? Why is it I don't see that? And if we don't respond to those questions correctly and have a correct understanding, we're either going to move back a step and say, well, they're not really persons and people. This is just a thought that's there. It's not really either that, or God forbid, we're going to think of this relationship really to be a relationship of, you know, someone who is so privileged and so great that they don't care about me. Yes, they are very privileged, and I am horrible, and I am way down here. But to say they don't care is looking at them the way we looked at materially privileged people. And al-ayadu billah. You know Fatimatu Zahra. You've heard Imam al-Hasan, salamullah alayhi. Imam al-Mujtaba, salamullah alayhi, says that my mother used to spend the entire night in worship. These few years, look at Fatimatu Zahra. 18 years, this seems to be the accurate, between 18 and 23. 18 is the more accurate age of Fatimatu Zahra when she passed. And that's what generally we've heard as well. There are some other views, but this is the more accurate view. Only 18 years of age. Look at her children. Look at her marital life. Look at her relationship with her mother, with her father, with the ummah, with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. These nights that she spent up worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, praying, dua, asking Allah for things. Imam Mustafa says, I heard she prayed for the neighbors, for everybody, and everybody, and everybody, mentioning them, mentioning all these different duas, and nothing about herself. And he asked, why do I see this? She says, Al-Jar Thumma Ad-Dar. You think this person would say, this guy like myself, I am a horrible person, I am way down there. But does she look and say, he's a horrible person, I don't care about this person? Is that her? Salamullahi alayha. No, that's not her. That is not her. In the relationship, she is the more proactive one.
أسعفيني بفيضك المعطاء
إنه سلمي إلى العلياء فامنحي نفحة الحياة يا سبيلي إلى النجاة يا طريقا إلى العلا
لك يا مولاتي نشأت كلماتي يا وسيلتنا وشفيعتنا فاطم الزهراء
لك يا مولاتي نشأت كلماتي يا وسيلتنا وشفيعتنا فاطم الزهراء يا وسيلتنا وشفيعتنا فاطم الزهراء
فاطم الزهراء
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The familiar maxim, if at first you don't succeed, try again, that we pass along to our children, encourages resilience and perseverance in the face of failure. We have reason to think someone encouraged former President Donald Trump to take the expression to heart. And unfortunately, he did. The article you're about to hear has been written by MSNBC opinion columnist Jessica Levinson. The piece is titled, Donald Trump's lawsuit against New York Attorney General Letitia James sets him up for another loss. Familiar maxim, if at first you don't succeed, try again, that we pass along to our children, encourages resilience and perseverance in the face of failure. We have reason to think someone encouraged former President Donald Trump to take the expression to heart. And unfortunately, he did. The many lawsuits Donald Trump and his allies filed in 2021, the vast majority of which he lost, provide a case study in perseverance. Trump persevered despite the fact that doing so was often irrational and immoral. There are few truisms in life, but here's one. Trump is litigious, very litigious. Before the 2016 presidential election, a USA Today analysis found that he and his businesses had been involved in 4,095 lawsuits over three decades, and in more than 2,100 of those lawsuits as the plaintiff. Lawsuits, even ones that are destined to fail, can still lead to success. Filing a lawsuit can scare people. Lawsuits are often costly and time-consuming to defend against. Filing a lawsuit can also lead to beneficial delays, like, to take two wild hypotheticals, delaying a state investigation into potentially fraudulent behavior, or a congressional investigation into an insurrection. Let's begin with the lawsuits related to the 2020 presidential election, some of which commenced before 2021. A quick reminder, Joe Biden won that election. As a direct and entirely predictable result of winning a presidential election, Biden is now the President of the United States. Also, you can search and search for massive voter fraud that led to Biden's win, but it will be less fruitful than searching for a snow leopard in a blizzard. And you will come up empty. The only significant fraud perpetrated in the 2020 presidential election is the lie that there was massive voter fraud. It should therefore come as no surprise that lawsuits filed by Donald Trump and his allies claiming there was fraud in the 2020 presidential election failed. Failed might be too tepid a word to describe the fate of these election-related lawsuits. These lawsuits belly-flopped into a pool containing nothing but air and concrete. By one estimate, Trump and his allies have a win-loss ratio of 0 to 40 when it comes to post-election lawsuits. Let's continue our tour of Donald Trump's lawsuits by moving on to something that happened right after the election, the insurrection and the effort to stop the election certification. The House of Representatives Select Committee is investigating the events of 6th of January to determine who knew what and when. In more predictable news, the man who led our government then and apparently tried to subvert the peaceful transfer of power from himself to Joe Biden doesn't want Congress looking under the hood to find out exactly what happened before and on 6th of January. Donald Trump sued to prevent the committee from obtaining certain White House documents related to the insurrection. He lost in trial court and again in the appeals court. Never one to be deterred by the law or by the facts, Donald Trump has appealed to the Supreme Court for emergency relief. Stay tuned to see what our nation's highest court does. And just when we thought the year might end before another big Trump lawsuit hit, the former president sued New York Attorney General Letitia James. Letitia James's office is investigating whether the Trump Organization may be civilly liable or, among other things, inflating property values to obtain loans and deflating property values to get beneficial tax treatment. Letitia James's office is also working with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office on a criminal investigation into similar alleged behavior. Donald Trump has not been accused of wrongdoing in the investigations. Donald Trump's argument is that Letitia James's investigation is politically motivated and she must restrict it or halt it altogether. If your bingo card had Trump calling James's inquiry a political witch hunt, then place a marker on that square. It is worth noting that Trump's lawsuit arrived on the courthouse doorstep shortly after Letitia James's office subpoenaed Donald Trump for testimony. As is often the case with his lawsuits, Trump's only problem with his lawsuit against Letitia James is that the law is against him. Prosecutors can have political biases without violating the constitutional rights of the people the prosecutor is investigating. That prosecutor simply must set them aside while doing her job. This is but a tour of some of the highlights or lowlights of the cases that Donald Trump and his allies filed in 2021. If we endeavor to provide an exhaustive list, it would almost certainly be out of date before it was finished, as Donald Trump would likely have filed another lawsuit by then. So, kids, aim high, try hard, and persevere. But if you're thinking of filing a lawsuit, check to see if you have a legally recognizable claim. With that, let's say goodbye to 2021 and the many hours Donald Trump's lawyers have billed on his behalf. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on October 16th, 2021 in a meeting with the officials in charge of the martyrs of Zanjan commemoration ceremony. The commemoration ceremony was held on October 28th, 2021. The need to study the funeral ceremonies held for martyrs.
You can also address martyrs' funeral ceremonies. One of the subjects that has been neglected, not been paid attention to so far, and should receive more attention, is the funeral ceremonies of the martyrs during the war and at the present time. At the present time, too, when they bring the bones of a martyr into a city, a magnificent funeral ceremony is held. Every few days during the war, in different cities, in Zanjan and elsewhere, huge funerals were held. Poets would compose poems and elegies, and people would beat their chests in memory of martyrs. This is unprecedented in the whole world. These are astonishing, memorable events that should be recorded and preserved.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united. Naming streets and roads after martyrs.
Another issue is the naming of streets and roads in cities. Cities should be decorated with the names of memories of martyrs. The city councils in different cities should know the names of the people the city is proud of. What honor is higher for a city, for a street, for a road and an alley than that the name of a great martyr, the name of a man of sacrifice, be put on it? These are things to follow up on. You should follow up on these issues. You have taken the first step, which is the accomplishment of these tasks and the formation of such commemoration ceremonies, and you should continue following up on these matters. God the Exalted will bestow the blessings brought by martyrs on our nation, God willing. May He raise their pure souls with that of the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. God willing, they will soon see the results of their endeavors, which is the victory of the Iranian nation. Fortunately, the Iranian nation has always moved forward towards victory over these years. God willing, the economic problems will be resolved as well. The problems that exist today in livelihood, the economic situation, and such things will be eliminated, God willing, with the determination of the officials and the endeavors of people such as you. May God reward you with His grace and raise our magnanimous Imam who showed us this path with the Holy Prophet. May the pure souls of the martyrs be satisfied with us. Greetings be upon you and God's mercy and blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.